today on Vox Talks Economics, when London burned to sticks. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe, follow us on Instagram as well. You'll find us at Vox Talks Economics. In the early hours of the 2nd of September, 1666, a spark in Thomas Farriner's bakery on Pudding Lane in the City of London ignited a blaze that would go on to consume 90% of the city's houses. The fire rapidly spread through the narrow streets. It devoured St. Paul's Cathedral and the wealthy homes along Fleet Street. It raged uncontrollably for 4 days. It reduced to ash 87 churches and thousands of homes and businesses. And then finally, on September the 6th, the winds died down, leaving a devastated London in its wake. In the 10 years that followed, London's houses and churches were rebuilt. But how did economic activity and wealth rebound after the fire? Philip Ager of the University of Mannheim and Paul Sharp of the University of Southern Denmark are two of the authors of a new study that uses contemporary records to describe London's uneven economic recovery after it burned to sticks. And they join me now. Philip, hello.
Hello, Tim.
And Paul, hello as well.
Hi, Tim.
How many people lived in London at this time? How would you describe the city that they lived in?
Yeah, so London back then, as it is today, was a pretty major place, especially by the standards of the time. So at the time of the Great Fire in 1666, there were around about 100,000 people living in the city of London. The population of what one might today call Greater London was around about 500,000, and the whole of England and Wales was just a little over 5 million. So it was, by the standards of the time, a really major place. It was also extremely densely populated. Had very narrow streets and a mixture of rather old and timber-framed buildings, which turned out to be rather a problem when the fire hit. The historical part of London, which was often or is often referred to simply as the city, was and is, of course, a major cultural, social, and economic centre.
Yes, how important was London economically? How rich was London?
Even, of course, today, it's extremely economically important. But even if you go back to Roman times, it was an economically significant area and was and still is, of course, surrounded by the remains of a Roman fortified wall, which reflects somehow how important it was. In the 1600s, it had a well-established commercial and financial sectors, including several marketplaces and goldsmiths who acted somehow like early bankers. There was everyone from a wealthy elite to poorer classes. And the government, on the other hand, was located also back then in neighbouring Westminster, which bordered the city.
Now, it's mind-blowing to imagine an entire city burning to the ground, and there wasn't a welfare state in those days. So how did people cope immediately after the fire? Their houses had burned down. How did the government respond? It had a city to build.
Well, that's a really excellent question. Of course, it was not easy for them, right? So around 100,000 people were left homeless. Many, of course, tried to seek refuge in nearby suburbs or in temporary shelters, such as tents set up in areas like Moorfields. The government did actually do something. It responded quite quickly. And already in February 1667, they passed the Rebuilding of London Act with the aim of establishing a formal reconstruction program. This involved a bunch of different things, including creating safer, fire-resistant structures, introducing new building regulations, mandating the use of brick or stone instead of timber, and calling for wider streets to reduce future fire risks. Then there was a special fire court set up, which was established to resolve disputes between landlords and tenants, ensuring a smoother rebuilding process. And then there was financial support, which came through taxes and levies. But of course, there were many poorer people who struggled to afford rebuilding costs. They had some charitable donations helped a bit, but in general, although wealthier households were able to rebuild in the areas which were affected by the fire, many poorer residents had to relocate to other neighbourhoods.
We saw the fire grow, and as it grew darker, appeared more and more, and in corners and upon steeples, and between churches and houses, as far as we could see up the hill of the city, in a most horrid, malicious, bloody flame, not like the fine flame of an ordinary fire. We stayed till it being darkish. We saw the fire as only one entire arch of fire from this to the other side, the bridge, and in a bow up the hill for an arch of above a mile long. It made me weep to see it. The Diary of Samuel Pepys, 2nd of September 1666.
There are contemporary records that tell the anecdotal story of the fire and the rebuilding of London. Great works of literature, but you're economists. So as economists, what did you set out to discover about this?
The idea of our economic analysis was basically to understand how such a big disaster like the fire was at that time, how it affects London's economic geography. So in particular, we were interested in understanding whether the fire led to a redistribution of economic activity and like changes in the wealth distribution. So what we did is we focused on understanding shifts in access to markets. So that was our proxy for economic activity and also access to financial services, as well as changes in wealth inequality. So for doing that, we were using records such as the location of markets and financial services and a so-called wealth tax, which was the London hearth tax.
So what can this tell us about the history of London that we don't know already?
I think our analysis provides some interesting new insights into how the Great Fire reshaped London's development. So particularly, as I said before, we looked at changes in the wealth distribution and economic activity. So overall, while we see that the population trajectory of London was mostly unaffected and continued to increase, we indeed find that there were important changes in the composition of the population. Wealthier households, they actually were able to return to the burned areas, and that, we argue, led to a change in the social and economic fabric of the city. So we see that there is some change in economic activity, so some of that moved out of the city and moved westwards towards Westminster.
In one of our most popular archive episodes, we spoke to Nathan Sussman about another aspect of London's history. In A New Story of London's Economic Development from 2019, he explained how newly digitised contemporary records have upended our assumptions about the emergence of London's financial system in the 17th century.
So I want to find out more about where you get the data for all this. You need a detailed record of the economic and financial activity that was going on in the City of London 350 years ago. Where do you find information like that?
Yes, well, we're fortunate that governments like collecting taxes, I suppose. So this is one of our main sources. And as Philip said, we were using something called the London hearth tax. This was a sort of wealth tax where you just counted up the number of hearths, fireplaces in a building, and that was somehow a proxy for how wealthy the household was, of course, right? So we were using this London hearth tax. We can observe this both before and after the Great Fire of London in 1666. And this tax, we believe, and others have argued, offers a valuable proxy for wealth and social status. And then we supplement this with historical records of the location of marketplaces, many of which are still actually in London today, and these goldsmith bankers, which I mentioned before, these sort of early forms of banks, which we use to track economic activity across London, both in terms of sort of markets for commodities, but also markets for financial services. So these records, they provide specific details about the location and operation of goldsmiths and markets, and this allows us to see how financial and trade activities were distributed across parishes. We digitize these records manually, and we georeference them to find out where these markets and goldsmith bankers were located. And this gives us the ability to create a measure of financial and market access at the parish level. So it's all based at the parish level within the City of London and Greater London.
How long does it take you to digitize records like this?
Well, thankfully, we have assistants. And so some of it was done by... But it takes quite some time. And yeah. I think one of the issues was you didn't have addresses like today, right? So you wouldn't have a street number. And so you'd have to look into exactly where this place was based on other historical records and this sort of thing. So it takes a while. Yeah.
Yeah. We should perhaps give some context about this for people who don't know London or the history of London. What we're calling the City of London traditionally referred to as the square mile, was a smaller historical unit, which was really London in those days. And if people visit London now, most of what they would consider London would be what's called Westminster, which is outside those city walls. And inside that city of London, those parishes were small geographical areas.
Yeah, exactly. And a big difference to today, actually, is that these days, very few people actually live in the city of London.
Yes.
Whereas back then, it was a major centre of population.
So you have your financial and your economic activity, you have your wealth records, you've managed to digitize those, but to create some kind of causal relationship here, it strikes me that London's economy wasn't having a great time. It had just had the plague the year before. There was also the Anglo-Dutch War going on. How can you make sure that the effects that you are seeing are the effects of the fire and not the effects of these other events?
Of course, we try to mitigate this problem, that there are like other confounding factors that could make the identification and the interpretation of our results difficult. So what we have is our empirical framework, which is based on a difference and differences estimation approach. What we do is this approach relies on the comparison of, say, economic activity in parishes that were affected by the fire versus those that were not. And this allows us to isolate the impact of the fire from other factors like the war and the plague that just happened at the same time. I mean, of course, we don't say that the war and the plague, that they didn't have an impact on London's economy. But I think that our estimation approach allows us to isolate the effect that the fire really had on economic activity at that time.
So tell me, what was the effect on economic activity?
We think of it as a story of continuity and change. So while the fire indeed caused some redistribution of economic activity. So we observed that some markets were actually moving westwards towards Westminster. Mm-hmm. And we also see that affected parishes, so those that where the buildings were burned down by the fire, they saw some decline in market and financial access. But overall, we see that the city of London recovered. And overall, there was considerable persistence in economic and financial activity. So like, despite we have this large shock, some economic activity and financial activity actually went back to the city, and then basically economic activities continued after that, almost as before.
And London was a place before the fire where all sorts of people lived very close to each other. What was the effect on inequality afterwards?
So actually, we find that the fire led to a decrease in wealth inequality within the city of London.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is basically that wealthier households, they could afford to return to affected areas, while the poorer residents, they were less able to afford the cost of rebuilding. Okay. And so because of that, the distribution of wealth became more equal, but at a higher level in the city itself. So basically what happened to the area in Greater London, so outside of the city of London, the consequences of the fire for economic inequality for this area, we can only speculate because of lack of data. So we cannot say so much about that in particular, but we can say something more in detail about the city of London because of the harsh text that we have.
So it sounds as if the fire has permanently changed the economic geography of London. And I suppose if it does that, it permanently changes the economic geography of the surrounding areas as well.
Absolutely. It was a permanent change, but it was, one could imagine, it's not as dramatic as one might have imagined.
No.
In part because people were able to move back, right? They were not permanently gone. It was more the makeup of the city changed. And then what we also found was that there was a tendency for some of these economic activities, the marketplaces and the banking services, to move westwards. So we see a change in the economic center of gravity moving westwards towards Westminster, a bit similar to what we know from today.
Although it's a very rare event for an entire city to burn down, good, it's not completely unique. Can this tell us anything about similar events that might happen today where you have major destruction in an urban area and what's likely to happen?
There's actually several different modern studies which have looked at what one might call urban resilience, so the ability for cities to survive major destruction. So there's a quite well-known study by Glaser in 2022, which looks at how if cities have been affected by war and natural disasters over 650 years and notes that there can be shifts in the spatial distribution of economic activity, a bit similar to what we see. There's also a paper by Davis and Weinstein from 2002. which looks at the bombing of Japanese cities during the Second World War, showing that although there is some effect, you know, of course, these cities are there again today as well. And then you have some other work which has looked at great fires, especially in American cities, and found that although the cities recover, the destruction leads to some opportunities for redevelopment and modernization, which is leading to long-term shifts in urban structures and economic growth. So there are several parallels with what we find. Ours is from an earlier period, of course.
Looking out of my window today at the City of London, it's quite remarkable to imagine that happening. We know it did. We know a lot more about what happened, thanks to you. Thank you very much, Philip.
Thanks, Tim.
And thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Tim.
The discussion paper is DP19316 at CPR. It's called When London Burned to Sticks, The Economic Impact of the Great Fire of 1666. And the authors, Philip Ager, Maya Pedersen, Paul Sharp, and Shanthi Sukli.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We have new episodes every week, and if you enjoy economic history, follow us to listen to episodes about the history of populism, debt, immigration, finance, and even the history of famous people. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, how climate change threatens the insurance industry.